You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast, and you're about to hear how, well, you're just going to hear a really lovely conversation about plants. That's really all there is to it. Oh, and you'll probably walk away from this podcast craving sweet potatoes. Just wanted to warn you now. Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. I am pumped that one of my favorite plant party products on the planet is sponsoring this episode. If you know me but at all, or have spent but a few seconds skimming my Instagram or my recipes, you'll know that Sun Warrior Plant Protein Powder is the Kanye to my West, the bees to my knees, the Wilson to my castaway. Okay, it's a product I wouldn't want to live without. Are you looking for a way to make your smoothies actually fill you up so you don't need a follow-up snack a few minutes after finishing your smoothie? Blend in Sun Warrior. Do you not want to get bloated, gassy, or feel crappy after consuming protein powder? Switch to Sun Warrior. Are you not a fan of protein powders with weird, chalky textures and nasty flavors? Use Sun Warrior. There is a reason I blend Sun Warrior protein powder into every smoothie I make and bake it into every baked good I bake. And that reason is, well, there are many reasons. So head to the show notes at partyinmyplants.com/56 to read all about the many reasons and to find out how you can get started with Sun Warrior. Janae Claiborne, the creator of Sweet Potato Soul, is a vegan chef, YouTuber, blogger, and author of the upcoming, or already published if you're listening to this after February 2018, cookbook, Sweet Potato Soul. I wonder how they came up with that title. What's amazing and admirable about Janae, well, many things are, but one thing is that she came to plant-based eating, or veganism, as you'll hear she prefers to call it, for animal rights reasons, and then miraculously reaped the health and happiness effects. My experience has been the exact opposite, and it was pretty cool to chat with an ethical vegan who doesn't want to rip my head off when we talk about it. I also admire Janae's pure love for the bean. And of course, we talk about ways to prevent the dreaded bean toot. And yes, it is quite a hoot. Janae, thank you so much for coming on the Party My Plants podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Sweet Potato Soul. Your brand includes one of my favorite plants in the world, sweet potatoes.
Mine too.
Oh my God. Is that why you chose the name for your business?
Absolutely. That's a simple reason right there.
Really?
My favorite food.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
So what is Sweet Potato Soul? Like, what do you do?
Okay. Well, Sweet Potato Soul started as a blog where I was just sharing my recipes and also my exploration into the vegan lifestyle. I became vegetarian when I was in college in 2008. And then in 2012, I became vegan, but like in the in-between, it was me trying to figure out how to cook, you know, plant-based foods and make them taste delicious and, you know, try to make my diet healthier, suit me better, give me more energy. And so basically when I started Sweet Potato Soul, that was actually in 2010. Mm-hmm. It was just a hobby. It was just a way for me to, you know, share what I was playing around with in the kitchen and take photos with my, I don't even know what I was taking photos with back then.
Like a not a phone. Probably yeah. Like one of those teeny little digital cameras that, that's right. Little square things.
And I don't even know, like, did I edit those photos? I mean, probably not.
Probably not. I guess Photoshop would have been the only option.
Yeah, I didn't do that.
That's no. For very savvy people.
Super savvy. But yeah, so that was how it started. Just as a hobby, just as, you know, me sharing my food and what I was eating and cooking and playing around with. And then in 2011, also as a hobby, I decided I'm going to start making some cooking videos and I'm going to post those to YouTube. So I did that and I was not consistent. I did them, my boyfriend and I did it whenever we had time. So I think in the first year we did like, I don't know, like maybe four.
Oh, wow. Five. One a quarter.
Yeah,
one exactly. A season.
We didn't have a schedule or anything. But the thing was, I mean, YouTube is super, super new back then. And I didn't really watch YouTube. So I didn't really understand that I should, you know, try to cultivate and grow an audience or I didn't get it. I didn't at all.
I still don't get it.
I still don't get it as much as I wish I got it. Yeah. I think that's YouTube is designed so you don't get it. I don't think anybody gets it. There's like the algorithm and it does its own
thing.
The
algorithm. Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. So that was back in 2011. And so in 2012, I started a private chef company called The Nourishing Vegan, because during all this exploration of healthy eating, cooking plant-based, also working at a vegan restaurant and becoming vegan, I started thinking, okay, well, it would be really nice to do this as a full-time career, to be able to cook for people, to be able to help people eat healthier and become vegan. So I decided, okay, I'm going to quit my job at this restaurant. I was working at Peace Food Cafe. Actually, I was working at Pure Food and Wine.
So. Oh, two favorite restaurants, yeah, to this show. Whenever I always ask people what their favorite plant restaurants are, and we've gotten Peace Food a ton of times.
Yes, that one is still my favorite in New York. It's so good. And working there was just like awesome. It was so much fun and I loved it. But I really always wanted to work for myself. And before I started any of this, and the reason I was just working in a restaurant was because I moved to New York to become an actress. Mm. So, you know, typical actress thing.
Yeah.
You have auditions.
Get the restaurant gig.
Yeah, you have the restaurant gig. And since I was already vegetarian, I figured, I was just committed to only working at a restaurant that was either vegetarian or vegan. So that's how I ended up there.
So you did grow up in Georgia, and I'm curious, you know, I don't think a lot of people in Georgia are eating a vegan diet.
Yeah,
was that really challenging for you to transition to a really healthy way of life with maybe your friends and family, like not eating so healthily?
Well, I was already a little bit different growing up in Georgia because my family, we didn't eat any red meat or pork. So we ate chicken and fish or, you know, sea animals, but we did not eat any beef, cow, pig, none of that. No mammals, basically. Hmm. So, you know, that's already weird. So I would go to birthday parties as a kid and like they'd have cheese pizza and they'd have pepperoni pizza and I would eat the cheese, but my friends would, you know, often try to trick me and get me to eat the wrong thing or, you know, be like, why don't you eat this? And, you know, I never ate burgers with friends. And when we'd go to cookouts, like at cookouts in the South, people barbecue, right? Mm-hmm. So ribs and all that sort of stuff. And I never ate any of that, nor did my family. But I never felt self-conscious about it. I always felt I felt proud. I felt like what my family and I were doing was better.
Yeah.
So I just felt kind of special that I didn't eat that stuff. And so when I became vegan, my family kind of understood already.
Mm.
They kind of got it. They understood that I wanted to eat healthier, but I also love animals. A lot of that has to do with my family. So with them, it was no big deal whatsoever that I should become vegan. But still, it's not like my family is like the definition of health.
Right.
My parents are pretty healthy. My mom and my dad, my grandmother, since I've become vegan, she's also become like my dad, my mom, my grandmother, they're all mostly vegan. They're like super high percentage vegan.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm with them, so I can't say for sure, but they are like, oh, I'm 90%.
Oh, that's what my family does too. Whenever they're with me, they're just like eating all the plants.
Oh,
but
right?
I'll catch them behind closed doors, or something will come out of their mouth like, oh, we went to dinner the other night and ate blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't eat
like,
that in front of
me.
So funny. But I mean, I don't like judge them or make them feel bad. I think they want to impress me or something like that.
Exactly. They want you to feel proud of them. And they want to feel good about what they're doing. My family is definitely like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, how do you handle the vegan stigma? I mean, I feel like that word vegan can be really exclusive and elitist. And I feel like there's so many vegans out there that make non-vegans feel really bad about themselves. And I'm just curious, like, as somebody who identifies as a vegan, like, how does that make you feel? And why do you think that exists?
I know what you're talking about. And that's part of the reason that I'm like, I stick to that term vegan as opposed to saying plant-based. Because for me, plant-based is too vague. Like I can't call myself plant-based because it's like, it says a little bit about what I eat, but it doesn't really say anything about what I believe in. And so as an ethical vegan, That's why I specifically avoid the term plant-based when referring to myself. Because, you know, you can be plant-based and you can still eat animal products. You can mm-hmm. still be an omnivore, really.
Right.
But eat still mostly plants. You can be paleo and be plant-based mm-hmm. and still eat, you know, cows and things. So that's why I stick to the term vegan. However, when people say, well, I don't like to call myself vegan because I don't like the stigma, I don't like labels, then I'm totally fine with that too. I'm like, you know, to each his own, whatever. Mm-hmm. As long as you're in my ideal world, everybody would be totally 100% vegan. But for now, as long as people are just eating more plants and being more mindful about where their food comes from and their decisions, then I'm happy. I don't care what you call yourself.
Yes. The more plants that everybody eats, that means the less meat everybody's eating yeah. and the better health they're all going to be experiencing. So I just think that's really what it boils down to at the end of the day.
I agree. Exactly. Exactly. It's like, whatever. It's a personal decision. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But you know, another reason I'm really in love with the term vegan is just because it's having such a moment right now. And I think we're hitting the tipping point as well. I don't think it's a trend. I think more people are becoming specifically vegan because, you know, more people around them are becoming vegan. It's becoming more normalized. Obviously, what the health is turning a lot of people vegan, not plant-based, not vegetarian, not like flexitarian, but vegan. And as a Black person, a lot of other Black people are using that term vegan too. For me, I like that because I like to be, say, for instance, they've watched What the Health and they say, I want to become vegan. I want them to know that I'm vegan. I want them to know that I can be a resource for them, that they can trust my recipes because they're vegan. It's not vague. I want to be real specific. And also, I'm not sure if it still has that like elitist perception.
Right.
I know that like there's a stereotype that vegans are like skinny, blonde white ladies. But, you know, I'm not that. So I want to really make sure that people say, oh, well, never mind. Obviously, my stereotype is wrong because look at this girl.
Totally. Totally. I mean, you're fit as hell.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of vegans that like go on social media and kind of put people down. Like I've gotten a lot in comments and videos, and I was vegan strictly for 4 years. And then I started incorporating a little bit of fish and eggs into my diet, and I felt fantastic. And I wrote an article for Mind Body Green about it, and I got insane backlash. I was pumped because it was my first ever Mind Body Green article, and I was just like, hell yeah, this is awesome. And I had no thought in my mind that I would get like verbally assaulted in the comments. And it just made me feel like, wow, like I can't believe I went around the world for 4 years calling myself a vegan when look how mean they are. If they care about animals, why are they so mean to people?
So for me, I understand though, when you see suffering, right? And when you see something wrong going on in the world and you see that it doesn't have to be that way.
Right.
It's like by any means necessary, right? It's like you want to get your point across. You want to express your anger. You want to make sure. I mean, I don't know how much those people are able to influence or sway your, like if you're eating animal products and it's like, are you really going to read those comments and say, okay, never mind, I'm going to be vegan again? Like probably not. That's probably not the most effective way to go about making you go back to being vegan.
Right.
But I still understand their point of view, and I understand yours too. But
you see that they're passionate about it.
Yeah, and I'm of the belief that there needs to be all sorts of voices. There needs to be the people who are super passionate, the people who are out in front of Canada Goose protesting, and like the PETA people, and there need to be those people. They need to be like the real militant people. I think that's necessary. I think there needs to be the people who are doing these undercover investigations of factory farms and making documentaries.
Yeah.
And being critical also. But so that's one type of people that we need. But we also need people like you who are, you know, and myself, who I think are less confrontational and more about influencing people perhaps to make slower changes and transition more slowly and be more like probably the two of us are probably more like the nice vegan.
Yeah,
the nice
we vegan want to inspire right? and entertain.
Exactly. But I think we need both. For me, you know, again, I'm vegan. So for me, I want as many people to be vegan as possible. So I want us to have as many paths of doing that as possible, because what might appeal to one person won't appeal to another. So we need to be able to speak to everybody in as many ways as possible.
That's a good point. All the different voices. I mean, some people respond to totally different things. Some documentaries mm-hmm. scare the shit out of them, so then they go vegan. Mm-hmm. Some people like you are just happy and fit and, yes. you know, inspiring that way, and that appeals to them. So I totally exactly. agree with you on that. So you went vegan really for ethical reasons, but then you reaped all these physical positive stuff as well, which you weren't yeah. really prepared for. Like, you didn't know right. that would happen.
No, I didn't. I didn't even, you know, because when I became vegan, I was already vegetarian, and mm-hmm. I kind of was like, oh, I'm perfectly healthy. I had a lot of digestive issues, and I just got to the point where I felt like that's not going to go away, because I don't think I had any perception of being vegan, meaning that you're going to be like optimally healthy. I was mm-hmm. only thinking about it from an animal perspective, because I was working at Peace Food and all the vegans there were ethical vegans. So yeah, I just never, I never thought about it like that until I actually became vegan.
Wow. And so what happened? So your digestion cleared up. I mean, so as a vegetarian, you were probably eating a lot of, or at least a little dairy.
I was eating a little too. Yeah. Not even a lot. I mean, a few times a week I would eat yogurt and I would eat cheese pizza, you know, ever so often. But really, that was it. I wasn't like a cheeseaholic or anything. Uh-huh. So even that little bit was really screwing me up. And within like probably 3 weeks of becoming vegan, my digestive system was like, it had like reset itself. And
wow.
all those issues that I had, like I was in the doctor all the time. I was taking different medications my whole entire life. And then it just went away. And then I realized, oh, I think this might have something to do with my new way of eating.
Yeah.
And then I started reading into it and learning more about it. And I'm just like, oh, yeah, it's like there's so much evidence that points to this. And that was around the time when I thought, oh, I really, really want to help other people experience this now. Because, you know, like we were saying before, like some people don't respond to animal suffering. Some people don't care about the ethical point of view. But some people are more drawn to and more driven by personal health changes, right? So I realized that would be a good angle for me because, yeah, I mean, because I care about both things and I was experiencing the health changes right away and yeah.
Totally. I mean, and I think it's funny because, you know, I went vegan for health reasons. I struggled with my digestion my entire life and going vegan. First, I went raw vegan for 6 months and that radically changed how I was living in LA at the time, actually, coincidentally. And there's raw restaurants left and right, at least at the time. So that was super easy. And like, I mean, I felt phenomenal. And it's funny for me because the ethical thing came next. It came second.
Yes.
And I mean, I think, you know, however anyone gets to that point is great.
Yeah, me too. Some people become vegan for the environment as well.
Can you tell us a little bit about how going vegan or just like really eating more plants helps the environment? Because I feel like people don't know as much about that as they do the other things.
That's true. Okay, so there's a few different reasons that eating plants are better for the environment. I mean, the first and perhaps most popularly cited reason is because plants don't require as many resources to produce.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think about the soy production or corn production in the United States, majority of that's grown is going for feed for animals to feed humans, right?
Right.
So animals eat a ton of food. You're feeding a cow, pig, a chicken, fish. They eat a ton of food. So you have acres of land that's growing food that's just for those animals for us to eat. Same with water. They need so much water, just like we do, just like our pets need water. They need the same thing. So it's incredibly inefficient. And that's part of the reason why traditionally most cultures in the world, unless they were like in the Arctic Circle, ate more plant-based diets, because it just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Economically, yeah.
Exactly. Economically, or like
And landly.
Exactly. Landly. Do you know, it's very expensive for people to have to raise animals. It's very efficient. Why would you feed an animal food that you could eat?
Yeah, that seems so. I'd never thought about it the way you just explained it at all. I'm just imagining like rows and rows of corn that people could eat. Hopefully non-GMO and organic or whatever, but why don't we eat it?
And that's how it was. That's how it's been until recently. It's always been like that. People were more plant-based because it just made more sense. It's only until recent that these factory farms have become so popular and become such huge industry in the United States and in the entire world. Mm. But then beyond the resources that animal agriculture requires, making it, you know, far worse than growing plants. Because, of course, plants need water, right? Plants need space. But you don't have to grow those plants to feed an animal. You grow them for you to eat, for people to eat. But aside from that, also, when it comes to, say, grass-fed cattle, grass-fed requires a lot of space. These cattle need to graze. They need space. They need, you know, a lot of grass. They're not just going to grazing in the jungle.
Right.
So that has led to a lot of deforestation, especially in the Brazilian Amazon, where they're cutting down so much of the Amazon, so many of the trees, the rainforest, just for grazing, just for cattle. And the majority of the trees that are cut down there are because of cattle grazing, not because cities are being built, not because housing developments for people who need housing. It's because cattle grazing. And also that affects not just the trees, but what about all the whole ecosystem of animals and other plants?
Totally.
And bacteria and fungi that live there. We're destroying all that for our own greed. And that's terrible for the environment, obviously. You know, trees are the Amazon is the lung are the lungs of the planet. So that's and then of
fascinating.
Course vegetation, you know, from factory farms, runoff.
Totally, yeah.
Water systems.
That's destroyed. A lot in Food Inc.
Exactly. Yeah, sure. Food Inc. and Cowspiracy are the two I recommend.
Okay.
Sure.
I was going to ask you that.
An environmental point of view.
Wow. Well, thank you for explaining that. No, that was like real. That was very fascinating. And you explained that very clearly. And I fully get it now. I don't need a documentary.
Good.
I got you.
Good. Exactly. I don't watch a lot of documentaries, but I guess I read more about it. Didn't watch. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, all right. Let's turn the page for a hot sec and go to food, 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 because that's your jam is the food.
Yeah.
Talk to me about Bootalicious, though. Is that, do you still run that? It's your meal planning service?
Yeah, but it's on hiatus right now because we're so busy.
Right. But it's all about like Bootables and that.
Yes.
Tell us
yes.
about a Bootable.
Okay, so Bootable takes the macrobiotic principle of eating, and it's just like a bowl. So Bootable, we did not come up with that term. We did not come up with this idea. This has been around for, I'm sure, like thousands of years.
Since
like
Buddha, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. Zen Buddhism tradition. So basically, it's a balanced way of eating. You have a whole grain, a legume, starchy vegetable, and a non-starchy vegetable, like a green vegetable, fermented vegetables, and healthy fat. And like if you go to Japan and you eat in a vegan, I forget what the Japanese term is for them, but like they have these like where the monks, you can go and eat when the monks cook for you, and basically that they're oftentimes, almost always, they're following these same principles. So you get these little small dishes of, like I said, a grain or the bean or a fermented vegetable. And then you're eating all these things together because they're super, super balanced. So basically what we just did was Buddha bowls became really popular a couple of years ago, like on the internet. So we just said, they're gorgeous.
Yeah.
They're colorful. They're delicious. Mm-hmm. They're so many. There's like trillions of varieties of them.
Right.
So we're like, let's just turn this into a meal plan where what you're doing, what our members do is they prepare all the essential ingredients at the beginning of the week. And it doesn't take but 1.5 to 2 hours. And then throughout the week, they're putting together their bowls right before they eat them. So it's not meal prep where you make like a tray of casserole, a tray of enchiladas, chili, all at the beginning of the week. and then just eat those four or five things throughout the week. This is even more variety. You have your essentials and basically put them into bowls and you change out different sauces, different spices, different fermented veggies, different flavors, basically. So yeah, that's what Buddhalicious is.
That's cool. I'm now hardcore craving a Buddha bowl.
Me too.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite combinations? I mean, you said there's like trillions of varieties, which is so true. Like, what are some of your go-to combos?
The classic one is probably, I mean, I guess it's my favorite. So sweet potato, of course, roasted sweet potato.
Nice. Way to stay on brand.
Yeah. You do different colors of sweet potato too. Brown rice for my grain. It's my favorite. For beans, oh my God, I like every bean so much, but probably eat black beans mostly. And then for my vegetable, I'll usually do just quick steamed broccoli. And for my fermented veggie, I prefer kimchi the most. And then for my healthy fat, I'll either do like a combination of a tahini sauce and avocado, or just like one of them. And then I also always top it off with fennel seeds and red chili flakes and, you know, maybe just some extra sea salt and black pepper.
Wow.
That's like super, super basic.
That's your go-to. But
that's my go-to. But if I'm going to fancy it up a little bit more, instead of black beans, I would do marinated tempeh.
Oh.
And then in addition to my kimchi, I would add some Korean gochujang sauce.
Excuse me?
It's a red pepper paste. It's spicy. It's got miso in it. So it's super rich and umami and like just next level.
Do you buy it or do you make it?
No, I buy it. I buy it at a Korean grocery store.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I mean, there are Korean grocery stores all around the country. So, but if you live in a place that you can't find it, you can always get it on the internet.
Right. Anything on the internet.
Exactly.
Yum. Okay. So wait, you said you would sub the tempeh for the beans, this fancy sauce. Yeah, say it again. Yeah. What's it called again?
Gochujang.
Okay.
And it's spelled GOCHUJANG.
Okay.
I think that's the,
I'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah, put that in there. It's great. But you gotta, if you buy that, you gotta make sure that you get buy a vegan version.
Oh, because just like kimchi,
sometimes they put shrimp paste or another.
Oh, they do that in kimchi? I didn't know that.
Sometimes, yeah. Especially if you're buying authentic, like real kimchi. I mean, whether you're going to the Korean grocery store or like Whole Foods, you should just double check.
Oh.
At Whole Foods, there's one, at least Whole Foods in New York, there's one, I think it's called Mother's. They put beef stock in
it. Oh my God. That's the brand?
Yeah.
I've seen that brand.
They have a vegan version too, but their other versions are not vegan.
Good.
Pretty sure that's the brand name. There might be another one. There's another one that is super cute branding. I don't remember the name.
But it's
that
cute.
One has fish in it. Yeah.
Interesting. So, all right. So read that label. Keep
your eye open for the kimchi and the gochujang. Make sure it's vegan, though.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know. Yeah. So you mentioned tempeh. I love tempeh so much, but so many people seem to be like conflicted and confused and weirded out. And so, talk to me about tempeh. Do you consume it a lot? What do you do with it to make it taste great?
Yeah, I mean, I don't eat enough. I mean, I wish I ate it more often. The thing about tempeh, though, you need to marinate it, so you need to think ahead of time.
Right. I hate ahead food.
Yeah, I know. I know. I have to. I do meal planning, so that's basically the only way I will remember to prepare my tempeh is if I've like already thought through this.
Right. So you mean you plan for yourself?
Yeah, for myself.
Oh.
When I'm marinating tempeh, I do a mix of balsamic vinegar, soy sauce, maple syrup, and then sometimes I'll add some smoked paprika or chili powder, and that's it. That's all. Sometimes I don't even add the powders. I just do the vinegar, maple, and soy sauce. And so you mix that up, cut the tempeh up in whatever shape you want it, and like marinate it in that overnight. And that's literally it. To put all that together, it takes 1 minute.
Right.
And then to cook it, it takes like, you can saute it like, you know, in 5 minutes, you put it in the oven, whatever. It's so easy.
It is. It's just that marinade.
Yeah. You just have to think about it. And then
thinking.
Barbecue tempeh on my blog, I posted yesterday a barbecue tempeh sandwich.
Oh, perfect.
Yes, that is the bomb.
Oh my God. I always order those at restaurants when they're there. Oh, so I'm pumped.
Yeah. And it's yours. So easy. You put it in a pan. There's a video also. There, you put it in a pan, cover it with some barbecue sauce, store-bought or homemade, cook it for 20 minutes in the pan on low so it don't burn. And like, that's it. You're done.
That's awesome. I love tempeh. It is so good. And it's good for you. I mean, it's, people freak out about soy, but it's a fermented soybean. Yeah. So if you're going to eat soy, I would say that's great. The one to go.
Yeah, it's great for you. I mean, some people, like my mom does not like tempeh because the fermented, you know, it's got that like fermenty taste, even though it doesn't have much of a flavor on its own, it does have a bit of a bitter fermented taste, right? So, you know, some people
that's
don't
true.
Like
that's
that.
That's why you have to marinate it.
Yeah, exactly.
Cover
you gotta,
that up.
You got to cover it up. But I mean, I love it so much. Sometimes I'll just fry it in coconut oil and sea salt and just like eat it like a snack.
Naked.
Put it up on, put it in my salad like that. Yeah, I love it.
But if you just do that in salt and oil, do you marinate that too or do you just go for it?
No, I just go for it. I just go for it. I mean, I'm like hardcore tempeh fan.
That's funny. What about tofu? I mean, tofu is another thing I hate because you have to, I love it, but you have to think ahead.
Yeah.
Even more so. You got to press stuff.
Yeah, I'm lazy.
That's
so, I don't do
so
all
frustrating.
That. I don't press it.
The most I've ever pressed ahead was like probably 20 minutes because I'm like, oh crap, I'm going to make tofu for dinner. Press it.
Press it.
And then I'm like, whatever. So you don't even press it sometimes?
No. When I used to cook for people, I did. And what I would do is because when I would go in people's homes, I would cook 5 different dishes. So as soon as I get there, I had a real great process down, right?
Tell
so
us.
I'd get there. I'd like start prepping things. But one of the very first things I would do is get the tofu out of the package and press it and just set it aside and forget about it until I need it. That's what I always did. So if that's helpful, like if you're meal prepping, I mean, even if you're just buying tofu, you can always press it ahead of time and like cook it later.
Right.
You just, when you get it home, just put it, you know, on a plate, cover. I usually do 1 or 2 sheets, like maybe 1 sheet folded of a paper towel on the bottom, same thing on the top, on the plate, put another plate on top and put a bunch of books on it and like.
Yeah, I do my blender. I do 2 cutting boards and a blender, which is very risky.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm taking a serious gamble every time. It's like if that falls on the floor, that was the stupidest mistake you've ever made. But I do it every time. I don't know. I like living life on the
edge. You seriously do. Oh my God.
Once my blender fell into the sink and I didn't know. And my fiance came home. He's like, why is the blender in the sink?
God. That's crazy.
Yeah, so I think the book method is better.
Yeah, that one. Just do that.
Yeah, okay. No one do the blender.
No one do that. But tofu.
Okay,
is,
cool.
When I was a kid, my dad made tofu all the time. Like he still does. My dad's like the tofu king. It's really crazy how much tofu he eats. But
what does he do? What is like some good stuff? I mean, my favorite is just like roasting it in barbecue sauce or in the, you know, I have like a George Foreman type thing. It's like a Cuisinart thing. I'll just press it in there, which is kind of weird, but it's fine.
No,
what do you do?
That's great. I mean, scrambles. That's my dad always scrambles, and he still does. And just, you know, garlic, onions. If you want to do I always usually add pepper, mushrooms, whatever type of mushroom you like in there. Saute that up first with some sea salt. And then I add the tofu and, you know, press it so it gets all like crumbly. And, you know, like little tiny pieces, and then cook that until it's nice and browned, then add some, you know, more salt, but then add some nutritional yeast and some turmeric, just a little turmeric to make it yellow. And obviously it's good for you and other spices. And then that's it. That's all I do. You know, tempeh is super dry. I'll be eating tempeh and it's like, oh my God, I need water. Even unless it's marinated, you know, if it's marinated, it's not dry. But like I do, like I said, the hardcore, like I just fry the tempeh up and that is really dry. But tofu, on the other hand, is not
moist.
It's much more moist. And
yeah,
that's one of the reasons I do like tofu, but I don't eat that much tofu. I eat it maybe like, I don't even know. I eat it very rarely, to be honest.
So I'm going to ask you the most annoying question.
Yeah.
Where do you get your protein?
How
sick
are
you of hearing that question?
Well, I don't get it as much anymore.
Oh, really?
No. The main question I get is soy bad for you?
Mm.
Or how much soy is too much soy?
How
or
do you answer
I be
that?
Avoiding soy? First of all, I always send people the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine's page on soy. They have like, do you know that group, PCRM?
I've heard of it, but I don't know about this awesome resource that you're about to share with us.
Well, they have a lot of great resources for anybody who's vegan or interested in veganism or just health, just health. Basically, they're like a consumer lobbying agency for healthy things. So they lobby the government to get certain things out of your food, also to protect animals. They have a lot of, they're always like suing somebody to end animal testing, universities, hospital groups, things like that. Also, they're trying to make our food cleaner. But they also have a lot of studies. So they like peer reviewed studies, and they do all these, basically on their website, they have like this soy page. It's called soy, and I think it's called, the page is called like Soy in Your Health. If you Google PCRM, soy, it'll pop up. It's called Soy in Your Health.
We'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah. It's a very long and detailed, but not like overly long. Like it won't.
I know you said long. I'm like, never mind.
I'm out. It's just detailed. It's not like me, Janae, like, oh, you should totally eat soy. It's good for you. My dad's been eating it his whole life and he's healthy. Like, it's not like that.
Right.
It's like, these are the peer-reviewed studies that show that eating soy helps reduce your risk of prostate cancer. Eating soy is helpful for reducing reoccurrence of breast cancer for women who've already had breast cancer. Eating soy is helpful in reducing your risk of breast cancer. Eating soy is good for cardiovascular health. So those are some of the things that eating soy are definitely helpful for. And PCRM's page that I'm talking about has the actual resources there. So if you want to geek out and follow through on the studies that they're citing, they're all linked. You can totally do that straight on PubMed. And you can really, you know, educate yourself on soy. Because the thing about soy, the reason that people are afraid of soy is that there's been this big, there's this myth that soy is bad for you, that soy is going to cause prostate cancer, it's going to make you grow man boobs, will give you breast cancer, that it's just like the worst thing. And the truth of the matter is that that is not the case at all. Perhaps if all you eat every single day is soy, you'll have...
Yeah, you'll grow man boobs.
Right. But if you eat black beans all day, every day, if you eat broccoli only every day, if you eat kale, if you do anything, that one food, I guarantee your health is going to suffer. You're supposed to be eating a balanced diet. And so for a food like soy, when you're eating it as a part of a normal, healthy, balanced diet, then it is good for you. Whether you're Asian, whether you're, because a lot of people say, well, it's good for Asian people, but it's not good for black people, or it's not good for white people, which is not true.
I've never heard that.
I hear that one a
lot.
Wow. Yep. That's another
stereotype
one.
If I've ever heard one.
Yeah. Eating soy is good for your health, as long as you don't eat 100% soy every single day.
Well, I think when veganism and this whole like eat less meat movement started years and years ago, soy was the only option. So people were just like going cray on the soy milk and the tofu and the tempeh and the soy ice cream and the soy cheese and the soy everything. And I think that was really not healthy. I mean, soy can be very processed. And, you know, they pop it in all these veggie burgers and all these soy nuggets and soy this and that. And anything processed is not ideal for our bodies. So I think that gave soy a terrible reputation.
Yeah, you're right. Exactly. And you know, another thing, a lot of times people will be like, I've especially had this conversation just with like in person with people when I tell them I'm vegan, especially older people, they'll be like, oh, soy is bad for you. I can't go vegan. I'm like, well, you don't have to just eat tofu if you're vegan. Like you could totally be allergic to soy and be a healthy vegan. You literally don't have to eat soy ever if you don't want, as long as you cook for yourself. Because if you eat out, you don't know what's going in your food.
Totally.
But the truth of the matter is most of the soy that's grown is not going to feed humans. It's going to animal feed. And if you're not vegan and you're eating dairy products or you're eating beef or any animal products, then you're probably getting plenty of soy that they've eaten.
Yeah.
That's like, talk about processed and non-organic. And then also, another humongous use of soy. You know, most of the soy that's grown in the United States, I don't remember the exact number, but it's like super, super incredibly high, is GMO, right? Mm-hmm. It is GMO. And it's not going to feed vegans. It's not going to, I mean, obviously, if it's organic, it's not GMO, but it's not going to that. It's going into junk food. It's going to processed food.
Oh, totally.
When you buy Oreos or when you buy whatever junk food that most of us eat, or if you're eating at McDonald's, you eating at Taco Bell, those foods have so much soy in them. The beef has so much processed soy in it. I mean,
absolutely.
It might as well just be vegan. I don't even understand why it's not vegan to begin with. It just should be, in my opinion. But like most of the soy that Americans are eating is not because they're eating a vegan
tofu,
diet.
It's
because they're eating animal products and eating junk food.
And crap food. You're 100% right. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Like most of the processed foods, if you go to any packaged food, you know, aisle with the cookies and the cereals and the crackers and all that crap, chips, that's just soy central.
Right. Oil.
Soy central.
It's soy oil. A lot of, like, if anything is fried and it just says like vegetable oil mix or whatever they say. It's going to be soy oil, just protein isolates in everything.
Yep.
So those, like you said, highly processed things are never going to be good for your body.
Never.
Ever.
Not even if you're vegan, and Oreos are vegan. So don't, that doesn't mean just binge on the Oreos. We've all been there.
Exactly.
So what are your top then vegan protein sources?
My top, well, first of all, I don't even think about any of that stuff. I mean, I do when people ask me, like you're asking me, but in my life, I do not count macros. I don't count micros. I just eat a whole food plant-based diet. I don't worry about calories. I have no clue how many calories I eat or the percentage of macros. I have no clue. And I'm very healthy. I love how I feel. I love how I look. I love my energy levels. I don't rely on like supplements. I mean, I do take B12, of course. But so that's me, right? But if specifically you need some more reassurance that you're eating enough protein, then I say stick to whole food plant-based. Make sure you're eating minimally processed foods. So eating plenty of vegetables. My top protein source, though, is probably legumes. You know, legumes are incredibly healthy for you, beans and lentils. So eat those every day. Lentils are higher in protein than beans. So it is very important, though. If you're pregnant, you are going to need to eat more calories and you're going to need to eat more protein. So, I mean, by eating more calories, if you're eating whole foods, then you can't help but eat more protein. But if you do want to bulk up your protein, if you're pregnant or if you're bodybuilding, that's also, you know, a reason that you'd want to eat more protein. Lentils, tempeh, also really high in protein. Green vegetables, kale, collards, all the dark leafy greens, broccoli, high in protein. Obviously, quinoa is high in protein. Whole grains, good for protein. The only foods that are really, like, they have protein, but they're not that high are fruit.
Right. It's true. What do you do with lentils? I mean, like you personally, not like what are lentils? No. Like what do you love to do with them? I mean, I've seen a bunch of your videos where you do the, you know, the macro Buddha bowls and stuff like that. I'm just curious if there's other fun things you love to do with lentils.
Girl, yes. Last time I had lentil tacos.
Mm.
I eat lentils like all the time. They are so easy to cook.
People
forget
about lentils. I feel like they're just like abandoned, but they're so good.
Exactly.
They're so easy. Like I always say, they cook just like quinoa. You just pop them in there. So easy.
So you don't have to worry about soaking and all that stuff. Just, you know,
no thinking ahead.
You're right. People totally forget. But I make tacos out of them. I do lentil meatballs. I do lentil meatloaf, which the meatballs and meatloaf are obviously a little bit more involved. They take a little bit more time. And I make lentil burgers. I make, I add them to my salads. I always have cooked lentils though. So you know, I'll cook them and I'll put them in salad, right? So I had a bunch of cooked lentils in the refrigerator, right? From last week. I meal prepped late in the week, like I think on Thursday. So I had lentils in the fridge and throughout the week I added them to salad, like massage kale salads, especially I like to do. I added them to my Buddha bowls. Too last week. And then I had leftover still yesterday. I've had maybe like a cup and a half leftover and I just threw them into, I made a taco filling. So
yeah.
Onions and garlic and all that. And I added the leftover lentils, for that. And yeah, so that's why I like to make a whole bunch because if you make a whole bunch of lentils and beans and rice and quinoa and all that stuff, then you can just be creative with how you want to use them throughout the week. You're not just like set on, you're not like committed to just eating lentil burgers.
Right. So how much lentils would you make, you know, if you were meal prepping for a week?
I usually make a pound.
Wow.
So, but I buy in bulk. So that's probably like 2.5 cups of dry. The thing is I do that with lentils, but I also do the same thing with beans. So I like to have 2 beans and one type of lentils, black lentil, green lentils, red lentils on hand.
What do you say to people who are like, I can't eat beans? They make me gassy or they hurt my stomach.
I say, listen, you need to be eating beans. This is very, very serious. If you cannot eat beans, the reason you can't eat them is because you don't eat them. Ooh. Because you don't, you need to have, your body needs to adjust.
It doesn't know the fiber.
Recognize them. Yes, that is a bad sign if you can't digest beans. And honestly, that's most of our country. Most of us can't.
Everyone says they can't eat beans.
Yeah, so that is is a bad sign. That means you're not eating enough fiber, period.
Right.
So what I say is to start introducing beans into your diet slowly, because of course you don't want to be walking around with stomach ache and gas.
Right.
So slowly just add, you can start by 1/4 cup, you know, once, like maybe on Monday have 1/4 cup, and then maybe Tuesday have 1/4, maybe Wednesday have maybe 1/2 cup, just like up your intake little by little. It depends on the person, really.
Right.
But up it little by little. Don't just be like, I'm going to eat beans every day now because I heard they're healthy for me. Just don't do that.
A lot of people do that with like vegetables too, like raw, especially raw vegetables. You know, people are like, I'm going healthy now. And they go like buck wild with the huge raw salads.
Right.
And they're like dying because their body's not used to digesting the fiber.
Right. They'd be like, I can't digest. Obviously, vegetables are bad for me.
Right. Oh my, I'm going back to the burgers. It's so much easier on my stomach.
Right? Like,
it's
no.
Sad. Yeah.
No, start over. And I'm very much a believer in the saying that anything worth having takes work. It doesn't just come easy. So you have to think about life that way. Like, the things that are easy that you can just pick up at the grocery store, that's a great analogy. The things in the middle section you can just pick up and pop in your mouth, you know they're not good for you. So why would anything in life, other things in life that you could just pick up and like are easy, why would they be good for you? You know they're not. You got to work a little harder. Maybe it's not like super hard, but you got to put a little bit more effort into things that are going to pay off in the long term and that are actually going to be good for you.
So fart your way to better health. Bottom line. Exactly. That's what we're titling the show.
Right? I like that.
Do you use dry beans and cook them, or do you ever use canned?
I do both. Yeah, okay. I do. I love to keep cans on hand because just in case, you know, I'm hungry and I want some hummus real quick, or I just forgot to soak, or I don't feel like cooking beans. I don't have the time. I don't want to have any excuses and I don't want to starve. So I always have cans on hand.
Yeah, it's good for emergencies.
Yes. And then I also always, I mean, most weeks I soak and cook. It's a lot cheaper that way. You buy them in bulk. Or even if you're not buying in bulk, if you're shopping at like a normal grocery store, you can get them super, super cheap, like the Goya brand or store brand. Soak them up. A pound is like $1 or like $1.50. It's like super cheap.
Yeah.
And it goes a long way. You save so much money if you do it that way.
Mm-hmm. That's a great tip. Great tip. So I want to transition. I hate using that word. but I would like to talk about this epic vegan road trip that you just did.
Oh my gosh, yes.
That was so cool. So you went, how long was it? 3 weeks, 6 weeks?
3 weeks from New York to LA.
That is awesome.
Yes, thank you. But okay, that was the road trip. But girl, I just moved in to our new apartment. Today makes 2 weeks.
Wow.
But I've been gone from New York for, you know, like since whatever, June 26th, however long that is. So like I've been on the road. I've been like sleeping in not my bed for all that time.
Oh my God. But you're back in bed.
I'm back in bed.
Wow.
Now I want a new bed. Like now the bed's not as comfortable as it used to be. For some reason, I don't know. It's a moving. But we were on the road tripping for 3 weeks and it was so much fun. We went to the South. And, you know, obviously, most southern states are not vegan meccas.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't go to Atlanta. I'm from Atlanta, and Atlanta has plenty of vegan food.
Oh.
But we didn't go there.
It was too easy. Too easy. You want a challenge.
Exactly. You know what was best for vegan food, though? Obviously, Austin is like, they have a reputation for being great for all food and vegan food. But also, my favorite, probably the best place we ate at, my favorite place was a little pop-up that they are only open on the weekends called the Southern V in Nashville.
Cool.
It was so amazing. So good. Oh my God. That was the best.
So it's called the Southern V?
Yes.
In Nashville. Yeah. All right. And so people are there on the weekends.
You got to get there early. They had a long line out front.
Wow.
Literally long. We waited in line for probably like 40 minutes until we could order.
Wow.
Once you
dedication.
Order, food is quick though. Yeah. That's how popular they are though.
It sounds like smorgasburg.
And oh my God. It's wonderful. I want to go back to Nashville just to eat there. And there's another place in Nashville called Sunflower Cafe, which is also really delicious too.
Wow.
Those are my two favorite there.
Good
but
to know.
On the road trip, we cooked for ourselves a lot.
How?
We stayed in Airbnbs.
Oh.
Yeah, so you have a kitchen. Also, guest houses. In Nashville, we stayed in a guest house. So
cool.
It was similar to an Airbnb, but it's just like, it's not an Airbnb. It's like a hotel mixed with an Airbnb because there's a kitchen in there.
Perfect.
It was perfect. It was great. It was great.
Wow.
We kept some of our cooking things in the car. In a box. You know, I brought my blender, my humongous KitchenAid Pro blender. So we can make it work. Because, I mean, as much as I like eating out, it's like, I know it's not the best for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, and it's too expensive anyway. So I just don't do it that often.
Right. Cool. Yeah. That's awesome. So you're just a traveling cook.
You know it. Oh my God. It's so fun.
That's really cool. That's so funny driving around with your blender out there. That
I know.
Sounds so fun. So what were some of your like go-to road trip snacks?
Okay, snacks. I love nuts. I never get sick of nuts. So dry roasted nuts or like nuts with, I love like harissa, put like a roasted harissa, almonds and pecans. On my blog, I have like a travel snack post that I created when I was in Austin. And one of the snacks is like a DIY Kind bar. They're so easy to make. You can just make your own. Don't even buy Kind bars. I mean, you can, but they're not vegan. So the company's not vegan. So I don't feel like I need to go out of my way to support them anyway.
Right.
So you gotta make my own.
Cool.
So those Rice Krispie treats, I love sweets. So toasted pumpkin seeds. If you don't want to do so many nuts or if you have an allergy, seeds are great. Sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Also chips. I love tortilla chips, plantain chips from Trader Joe's, the roasted kind.
Oh, God.
Hummus.
Yum.
You can't be too messy in the car, right?
No, you can't.
So, no salsa.
No salsa. You cannot drive with salsa. But hummus, that works.
Yeah, hummus is fine. And then, like, for me, having a sweet potato, I'd often, before we hit the road, like, we'd have, like, these eight-hour drives. So mm-hmm. I would simply go to the grocery store, get some sweet potatoes, and put them in a microwave and keep them in the car. And they are a great snack.
Would you drizzle them with anything?
A little bit of sea salt. I'd often cut them up after I microwave.
So good.
Cut them up, put a little bit of sea salt in them. Sometimes I do like a drizzle of tahini and lemon or tahini and lime.
Ooh.
And that's it. But I can eat them cold. I can eat them hot. I can eat them plain. I can eat them
raw. No, just kidding.
No, yeah, I don't like it that much.
That sounds great. I never thought about that for a snack on the road.
They're
but that's
great.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and they're good. They have a lot of calories. So, I mean, I don't know exactly how many calories, but I've heard they have a lot
either.
Of calories. So, like,
rumor has it.
I know. They have fiber.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about protein, but I know they have a lot of fiber.
Yeah.
And I think they're calorie dense. Because I know this because I have a couple of friends who are personal trainers who say that you should eat the sweet potatoes after you've worked out because they replenish your energy. And then also they, like if you're bulking, sweet potatoes are apparently very good for you. They're starchy. They help you bulk.
Mm. And they're great for digestion.
Yeah, they're great for digestion. They're great for your skin. They got that beta carotene.
It's almost like you should like make a business about sweet potatoes.
I know, right? I never thought about
what a concept. So you do have a cookbook coming out. Is it titled Sweet Potato?
Yeah.
Soul?
Sweet Potato Soul.
That's awesome. That's congrats.
Thank you so much. And it's in pre-sale right now. Or you can pre-order.
I didn't know that.
You can pre-order it now. Yeah.
We did not even plan this. Link. This is not a whole plug thing. This is organic.
I know. I didn't know. I didn't even know it would be pre-order yet. It comes out in February. But so when we first talked, I didn't know it was going to be available so soon for pre-order.
So we can get it on Amazon now.
You can get it on Amazon, IndieBound, Barnes & Noble, wherever, you know, all the places where you can pre-order books. Yeah.
So how many sweet potato recipes are going to be in it?
Oh my gosh, so many. I don't even know for sure. I can't. That's a good question. I don't remember. There are 100 recipes total.
Okay.
There's actually probably more than that now that I think about it when you count like sauces and things but and drinks and things. But there are a lot. My favorite sweet potato recipes in the book, though, are classic sweet potato pie, sweet potato cinnamon rolls.
Oh.
They're sweet potato donuts.
Oh. Oh my God.
I want those sweet potato recipes. Oh my gosh.
I'm very excited.
I'm trying to think of like savory sweet potato stuff. There's so much savory stuff in there too, though. There's like a Southern Buddha bowl with sweet potatoes. There's a cornbread stuffing with them. A lot of sweet potato stuff in there.
Fantastic. Well, everyone needs to get that book. I'm going to get that book. I love sweet potatoes. I am stoked.
Yes, me too.
And I have a question about your YouTube channel. Because you are like YouTube goals and you're killing it.
Thanks.
I'm curious, who films it for you?
So that's my partner, Max.
Okay.
And yeah, it's my man, my romantic man, my partner. When we started doing videos back in 2011, that was him. He was doing it also.
Oh, wow.
But now we just do it full time together.
Oh, that's amazing.
I know. It's great.
That's really cool. So some last few questions about plants before I let you go.
Okay.
What is one of your favorite plant party restaurants besides Peace Food?
Okay. Well, since I live in LA now.
Yeah.
I haven't eaten out much, but I have been here many, many times before I moved here. And my favorite so far is this Thai restaurant in Santa Monica called Sadha. It is so good. If you like Thai food.
I love Thai food.
Oh, and this was 100% vegan.
I've never heard of it.
So you don't even have to ask for like, please hold the fish sauce.
Right.
You know?
Wow. Can you say it slower or spell it something?
Yeah, yeah. Sadha. So let me look it up. Sadh. Wait. Yes, yes. I'm spelling it correct. Sadha.
In Santa Monica. Okay. I was just out there in May and I did not know of this, but I'm so sad because Thai is like my favorite food.
Yes.
All right. Next time. Yes. Next time. Get it? Okay.
Yeah.
Moving on. What is your favorite plant to eat besides the sweet potato? Because that is way too easy.
Okay. Besides the sweet potato, collard greens.
Oh, okay. Your southern roots.
Yeah, from the south.
What do you do with them? Steam them, or is that pretty lame? Saute?
Yeah. More saute. So I add garlic to me. I always add tomatoes to mine, but like my family, they never added tomatoes. My dad, though, he like recently, within the last 10 years, he started doing that, and that's my favorite way to do it now. Because they, you know, you need a little acid in most food, but greens especially, because they're bitter and they're kind of tough at first. It helps really break them down. So tomatoes give them the acid and the sweetness. It's like perfectly balanced. And I do a little soy sauce and smoked paprika as well.
Ooh, yeah.
So they're smoky. Of course, we need them smoky if you're from the South.
Yeah.
Collard greens I love. I also eat them raw. I use them as wraps. I make collard green salad. I put them in curry. I do everything with collard greens. Because kale is super great and super popular and I eat it a lot. But collard greens I like. And I like them better just because I'm biased. I've just been eating them forever.
You like the underdog.
Exactly. They really are the underdog. They're so underrated. So
they really are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're
great. I love beans. They're my other favorite thing. And black-eyed peas are my favorite type. But really, any type of beans, peas, legume, I love.
That's great. So again, the underdog.
Yes, exactly. And of course, I chose black-eyed peas because I'm from the South.
Oh, there you go. I love it. Your roots.
And then corn, you know, also a very Southern thing. Mm-hmm. Corn, all my favorite foods I'm just noticing are like Southern staples.
So
corn. I love anything made with corn. I eat corn all the time. Mostly like, I mean, I eat cornbread. I make tacos all the time. Mm-hmm. So corn tortillas. I love corn. I love popcorn. Oh. Corn in any form, I eat it.
That is so funny. There you go.
Yes. And then, of course, again, I'm from the South. Watermelon and peaches.
Okay. That is so funny. I love it. I mean, yeah. Those are all great plants. So I know.
Exactly. And, you know, in the South, we do have, like, lately, as food in the United States has become so industrialized within the last, like, 70 years. But this is, like, a phenomenon throughout the United States, this industrialization of food, food becoming more processed and unhealthy. But traditionally, food throughout the United States, throughout the world, even in the South, has been plant-based. And as a Black person, and, you know, me growing up eating soul food, my grandmother and my dad would make, soul food is not just, like, buttery, high-sugar fried foods. Traditionally, it was very much plant-based as well because it's most efficient, it's most cost-effective, yeah. It's healthiest. It gives you the most calorie for your buck. It just made more sense. And so a lot of the Southern foods, like when I was writing my book, it's all veganized Southern foods, soul food. When I was writing my book, I was doing a lot of research on this and it made so much sense that, oh, this is why we ate so many collard greens when I was growing up. This is why I ate so many beans and lentils growing up. This is why I ate so much corn, because it's cost effective and it's healthy. And it's just part of the tradition, as much as like fried chicken is and pound cake and all these things are. So are the plant-based foods.
That is very interesting.
Yeah, it's not so much of a leap as people perceive it to be.
It's also not nearly as expensive as people perceive it to be, eating plants.
It's really not. I have a under $35 grocery video and a part two with like how to prepare all these things. Under $35 for the week. And I have a recent video where I do every single thing is the most expensive per serving that I came up with. I think it was like 6 servings for $1.56 total.
So, what?
No, it was $1.56 per serving. So the video, if you look on my YouTube or if you go on my blog, it's under $2 meals. It's a recent video.
So yeah, that's awesome.
But it's like, it's really easy.
Yeah.
I didn't have to go to a special grocery store. I went to one grocery store to buy everything, and it was a normal grocery store. I went to Ralph's, okay. And I didn't have to buy anything on the internet. I didn't have to go to Costco. You can totally be cheap or be on a budget or just be, you know, save money and be vegan and just shop normal.
I mean, it's the not normal stores and the not normal products that are expensive. You know, it's the ashwagandha, exactly. Blah, 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 exactly. Blah, blah, you know, all that pretty packaging. That's the expensive stuff. No, that's not stuff you use every day anyway. Like beans are so cheap. Quinoa, plants, like real plants.
Right. All the basics.
Yes. Ooh, okay. I'm going to calm down. Girl. What is your most used kitchen tool?
Well, now that I've been on the road for so long and I didn't have most of my stuff, I realized that I used to say my food processor, but I have literally used it just only once since we moved into this place. 2 weeks, I've used it once. I used to use it like all the time.
Yeah.
So, but I realized I don't really need it that much.
Huh.
So I think for me now, I'm just trying to go back to basics. And I've noticed that the most used is just simple, the cutting board and my knife.
I love that. Knife. That's great.
That's all you need.
That's all you need. It's really true. It's really true. What is a book that's inspired you in some awesome way?
Like in life or recently?
Whatever comes to mind, a book that's really made an impact on you that you think could make an impact on other peeps.
Well, recently.
Besides your book.
besides my book. Of course, it's my own. So I did a sponsorship thing with audiobooks.com over the summer, and I'd never listened to an audiobook before then. And I told them, I'm like, I love audiobooks.
Hopefully they're not listening to this.
I know, right? Oh my God. But I really hadn't. So, but anyway, we did this sponsorship thing with them, and I ended up listening, not reading, but listening to Jane Goodall's book, Seeds of Hope, and it's all about plants.
Ah.
And I love plants. But it's like about the plant world. So not just like, not about eating plants because they're healthy for you, but the importance of plants, the wonder, the amazement, the life of plants, the variety, the It's amazing. It's so interesting. I mean, there's lots and lots and lots of different books and documentaries and things about plants, written about plants and plant intelligence, plant communication. Uh-huh. But her book is basically, it's like a, I mean, it's about all those things. It's like, I guess you would call it pop science, pop plants.
I've never heard that. Cool.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. But it's really good and it's very inspiring because as a vegan, I do care a lot about animal agriculture. And that's why I don't eat animals because I don't think it's right. I don't need any animal products because of that. And I don't like the exploitation of animals. And that's also bled over into how I buy my clothes, how I buy just like most things. I don't like go out and get the new electronics for this reason. I don't buy a lot of new things, period. Because of like exploitation of other people and all this, right? Mm-hmm. But I had an understanding of the over exploitation of plants, you know, like mass farming of plants. But I didn't think too much about it because basically that's all I eat are plants, right?
Right.
But after reading this book, I started thinking a lot more about the importance of not exploiting plants, relying on all my food to come from the grocery store and from these huge, massive farms and trying to avoid GMO things. And I'm not convinced of the necessary health benefits of eating purely organic because, of course, if something is organic, that doesn't mean it doesn't have, like, they still use pesticides, they still use fertilizers, all these things. They just have to be coming from an organic materials, right?
Right.
So, but these things are still, it's all still chemicals, but especially organic because I want to avoid GMO. I want to avoid the over exploitation of other living things. So plants, also people, if you're just eating conventionally farmed foods, then that can be affecting the people who are working the farm, the people who are picking your produce. Anyway, this book really helped me to think more about this and to want to shop. I already shop a lot at the farmers market, but moving to California just makes it easier for me to almost exclusively buy my produce from farmers markets.
Mm.
I just have more respect and more reverence and more mindfulness about where my plant food is coming from as well.
Wow, that is so fascinating and very appropriate for this podcast.
Yeah, I know, girl.
I'm really curious to read that or listen to
it's
it now.
Great. I highly recommend it.
Wait, what's the name of it again?
It's called Seeds of Hope.
Nice.
By Jane Goodall.
Perfect. Thank you. Okay, so where should everyone go to get their sweet potato soul on?
Okay, you could go to sweetpotatosoul.com.
Pretty easy.
That's my blog. But you know, I'm Sweet Potato Soul everywhere. So sweetpotatosoul.com. On YouTube, Sweet Potato Soul. On Instagram, Sweet Potato Soul. Anywhere you want to find me, I'm just Sweet Potato Soul. But
that's
my
awesome.
Biggest platforms are my blog. There are hundreds of recipes on there. You can use the search bar at the top right to find whatever you're looking for. There's a recipes tab so you can narrow things down if you want to browse. You could just scroll through. That's my biggest platform. YouTube is my second biggest platform. And then Instagram is my third. And on Instagram, you should follow me there because I do stories every day, almost all day. You know, hopefully it's inspiring stuff.
Yeah, I would say it is.
Let's and you can always reach me. I mean, I'm most responsive on email and also on Instagram.
Awesome. Sweet and potato
YouTube.
Soul.
I'm
and
always YouTube. On YouTube comments.
You're
too.
On the tube. Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on today and talking about all the plant stuff, the sweet potatoes, and sharing with us today. It's been awesome.
Absolutely. This is so much fun. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. I hope you're able to satisfy your sweet potato craving this evening. You got this. I believe in you. I mean, sweet potatoes are like the easiest thing to make. Just spiralize one and saute it in coconut oil on the stove, or chop one, toss it in olive oil, salt, and pepper, and roast it in the oven, or microwave one if you like to roll like that. If you want to tag me at Party in My Plants on Instagram or Facebook, if you eat some sweet taters after hearing this, that could be cool. I'll say what's up and we can chat about it. For the show notes from this delicious chat, including links to some of Janae's plant-based or vegan recipes, plus so much more that makes healthy living not suck, head to partyinmyplants.com/56.